Hello, and welcome to a free preview of Greatest of All Talk.
I think the nicest possible explanation here is that Adam Silver did approach the TV networks before the season, and they were like, hey guys, we're having a shift in tone on the broadcast. And it sounds like that did happen. Like, we want to be more positive. We want to be more educational. We want to be minding the game like J.J. Redick on the national broadcast. So let's refrain from crushing people. Let's not yell at the referees. Let's not belabor the point when there's long stoppages because of reviews. Let's basically not do anything that Jeff Van Gundy was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And it would be amazing if Bob Myers, like, signed his contract before that edict came down, heard that edict, and was like, that's not what I signed up for. I'm going to do the most ridiculous version of what he's asking for and just see how long I can get away with it before Eddie Wood calls me out or before, like, you know, the league says, hey, maybe, you know, update the talking points. It's crazy. It really is a generic praise marathon. And I don't enjoy it as much as you do because generic praise just drives me crazy. So I have to put these games on mute. And every once in a while, I'll see the quotes come along on Twitter. And it's like, oh, here we go. Here we go again. Anyway, about that game. Cisco points out that Denver scored on, what, 10 consecutive possessions, something like that. What was so impressive there was a number of those scores were created by their defense. So this is just not just a matter of clutch offense. These five guys, you know, form a fist. They've been doing it forever. They can run through their plays and their counters blindfolded. It's they're actually scoring in transition, forcing turnovers, taking advantage of other teams' weaknesses when they're playing defense. And if you flip back 3-4 years to where they were and where Jokic was as an individual defender, I don't think they're having quite as much success on that end to close a big game like this one was. The other impressive part about that closing effort, obviously, Christian Brown just everywhere. I mean, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Couple dunks there late, especially the left-handed one. Just wild. He didn't look like he believed it after he landed. It was like, whoa, did that just happen? Like, he had a great reaction. That's pretty much how everybody in the building felt. So what a cool moment for him. I think the takeaway in terms of that particular matchup, and there's a possibility we get this in the Western Conference Finals, right, or second round, depending exactly on how the seeds shake out. Minnesota's defense is at its best when they're crowding you, they're being disruptive on the ball, when Rudy's controlling the paint, where they're being really, really aggressive and pestering and just making you uncomfortable and forcing you into really tough shots. And the magic of Joker is that he's like the perfect counter to that. He can easily score one-on-one against Rudy in the basket area because he weighs practically, oh, I don't know if he weighs twice as much as Rudy does, but he's twice as wide as Rudy. He's got twice mm-hmm. as much acreage as Rudy, right? So he can always get a basket there. But then they are just excellent, much like, you know, college football offensive coordinators. If you're sending too many blitzes on defense, what happens, Andrew? They hit you with the screen pass for a touchdown, right? Like, Joker is just so good at, like, okay, you're pressing up on our wings on the perimeter. You're trying to ball deny. You're trying to blow up pick and rolls at the top of the key. Okay, well, Aaron Gordon cuts back door, dunk. Christian Brown cuts back door, dunk. Like, they just have all that stuff so internalized. And it really looked like kryptonite for how Minnesota wants to play defense. And if you're Minnesota, the adjustment is never going to be like, let's just sag off and go soft and like change things up, because that's not who you are. That's not right. What made you the number one defense in the league. And so it was a case where, like, you know, the MVP was better than the defensive player of the year, and the MVP's wide range of offensive skills was better than the NBA's best defense. And by the end of it, they're looking around, you know, who's supposed to be guarding who. I think Anthony Edwards even dropped some MFers in the post-game press conference about how good Joker is. Like, they just didn't have any answers. They knew it. Like, they were just flat beat. And I think that is why, you know, Cisco's statement in terms of viewing Denver as the title favorites heading into the playoffs is right on, because they are so complete when they're healthy. And I do think the health asterisk has to come into play here, because I saw Denver play without Murray against the Clippers, and it was a very different late game experience. What wound up happening was Joker said, all right, I'm just kind of annoyed at everybody around me. I can't believe we're losing this game. And so he went down into the post and just started punishing away, like play after play after play. And the strategy was successful, but it didn't ultimately work. They lost the game. And so I think the combined gravity of Joker and Murray on the perimeter is really what opens up all of Denver's offense. It allows all those supporting guys to either get wide open threes or dunks beating the aggressive defenses, right? Mm-hmm. And if Murray misses time, I don't think Denver will coast to the championship, certainly not in 20 games. But I think it's going to be much, much more difficult. Frankly, they could potentially still win the title. That's how good Joker is. Like, let's say they lost Murray halfway through the run. It's not inconceivable that they won the title. But I think Cisco's vision is, like, turning injuries off.
Right.
And that's why, you know, I look at a team like Boston. I think that they would be able to sustain an injury to one of their key players a little bit better than Denver and still make it through to the finals at minimum, compared to Denver, where there's so many good teams in the Western Conference. If Murray's ankle acts up at the wrong moment, you know, Denver becomes vulnerable in a way that's different than what Cisco's saying.
Yeah, I mean, Denver is not a counterpart to the 2016 Warriors if Jamal Murray is not out there. Jokic is still great enough to give them a shot, but it's just a completely different experience. And speaking of the Warriors, one more Bob Myers highlight here. Bob Myers explaining, the Wolves' defense is legit. This isn't a small sample size anymore. It's game 80. I'm reading a tweet here. Yes, it's not a small sample size. Thank you, Bob, my favorite announcer.
Well, hey, there's still 48 hours for that to fall off a cliff.
Yeah, let's see what the sample looks like with a full 82.
Fraud alert. Timberwolves defense exposed.
So as far as the MVP statement portion of the conversation, I'll quote Anthony Edwards going into the game last night. He says, I think everyone knows what is at stake. I don't even need to talk about how big it is. Everybody knows. And then Jokic on the showdown said, I don't think it's really a big game. Yes, we're going to go out there and play to win the game, of course, but I think people are just making their stories that it's a big game. Hopefully it's going to be interesting. And Ben, this is where I have to push back. Jokic continuing to pretend to not care about basketball or the sorts of things that basketball fans place value on, including the MVP. It's just one of the lamest subplots in the league. Like, I don't know how we can convey this message to him or who in Denver can do it, but it sucks, especially if he's going to be this great and he's going to be the best player of this generation. I want him to acknowledge that he cares, because when the game started on Wednesday night, you could see that he was locked in and was taking the T-Wolves seriously. And it was great. I mean, sort of along the lines of what I was saying with Zion on Sunday, it's rare to see regular season games where you get to see great players tested. But this was one of those nights, and it's why I came away enjoying it as much as I did, because the Wolves actually do present problems for the Nuggets sometimes. And then we got to see Jokic answer that challenge and answer it emphatically in the second half and just dominate the entire time and look head and shoulders above the rest of the league. So he cared when he was on the court. His statement came on the court, and I continue to be annoyed by his indifference off the court. Feigned indifference, because he's not indifferent, but he, for whatever reason, feels like he should pretend to be indifferent.
Well, I'd like to challenge the premise of your take. I'm just seeing how annoying this can be over the course of the show.
Right.
So I see two separate things at play here. First of all, I do see the annoying feigned indifference that bothers you and bothers a lot of people. And it really bothered me about the whole title parade thing. You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I got to stay for the title parade. Oh, this is such a huge hassle. It's very hard to engage fans when your leading personalities aren't fully engaged. So as much as I'm kind of making fun of LeBron James for doing this podcast, like, I'm watching, you know, I'm interested. Where's his mind going? And it seems like it's going to Steph Curry a lot, which is great. You know, cool. He's a great podcast muse. So congratulations. I'm with you, LeBron. I don't like that part of it. I think what I would push back on just a little bit here, though, is the idea that it was a big game for Joker. I think it was a big game for Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards has never won a playoff series. Anthony Edwards is on the rise. Anthony Edwards is having the best season of his career. Anthony Edwards wants to be the number one seed because, as I pointed out to you, he's never won anything since like AAA high school basketball in small town Georgia, right? Like, he never did anything in college. He's never done anything in the NBA. The Timberwolves being the number one seed at the end of this season, had they won that game and closed it out, is a huge freaking deal for the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're already on track for their second best season ever in franchise history. It's nuts, right? So this is a really big game for Anthony Edwards. I'm not sure it's a big game for Joker. I definitely don't think he views it through this lens of like MVP statement at all. I just think that he just views the world differently. And I think that he saw some big games in the bubble. He lost some big games in the bubble. He's, you know, he played that, what was it, triple overtime game against the Blazers in the playoffs. I'll bet you he said that was a big game because he played like 73 minutes or whatever, I mean, maybe 62.
Probably some felt like a big number. Game, yep.
Yeah, and I bet you he's played some pretty big games for his national team at some point over the course of his life. So I see two different issues. I see, one, that game mattered more to Minnesota than it did Denver. Denver still beat them and still ran away from them in the clutch. To me, that's a sign Denver is noticeably better than Minnesota on this pre-playoff hierarchy, right? Two, the spotlight is about to go back onto Joker. You know, May and June probably going to be Joker time in the NBA. Everybody just kind of mostly ignores him from a media standpoint, but like we all get sent to the Western Conference Finals. We all get sent to the finals. If that's where Denver is going to be, and that's where I actually agree with you 100%. Better get some new material, bro. We got a lot of press conferences to get through, and I do think it grates on a lot of people. I think it's totally fair that it grates on you, and I would tend to give him a little wider berth than most players because, you know, there's this language barrier, there's a cultural barrier. He seems like a relatively private guy, and he also seems like the kind of person where maybe he can't communicate everything he's thinking because he's just thinking it at such a high level to the masses, right? Like he doesn't really know how to explain how he sees the court. Like he never wants to engage in those kinds of questions, probably because he's way smarter than us at basketball. And so he just kind of gives up. And one day I would love for him to get a podcast and to pour it all out there. And then we could really like pick his brain and figure out what's going on. But I do think greater engagement, if they are going to make another title push, I'm right there with you. It should be table stakes if you're this big of a star. And, you know, if he does win his third MVP, he's up there with Moses Malone, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. Last year, I think there were some people who said, oh, that feels like hallowed ground. Maybe he shouldn't be there because he hadn't won the title yet. He hadn't won the finals MVP. Now that he's done that, I look at him potentially winning a third MVP this year, and I'm like, well, he's better than Moses Malone. Moses Malone's famous for blowing layups so he could get offensive rebounds. That's literally what Moses Malone, his like legacy is in the NBA, pretty much. And that's a little harsh, and he obviously did a lot of great things. But if you ask most people about Moses Malone, they're like, yeah, you know, he was an offensive rebound merchant. No one's saying that about Joker. Joker's a better player than Moses Malone. Now, Magic and Bird, you know, we already got some spicy Jokic takes, so we don't need to go down that route again. I'm kind of surprised Magic only got three MVPs in his career, frankly. You know, and it would be kind of fun to go back through and like do it ourselves and decide who actually deserved it for each year. Feels like Magic got shortchanged a little bit. But, you know, Jokic and Bird, that's a convo. You know, he's going to need to win some more titles to really sway a lot of people, I think. But it feels like an appropriate time to reward him with his third MVP. And to your point, it feels like an appropriate time for him to carry himself like a three-time MVP, an all-time great, somebody whose words matter, who, you know, should carry some weight. And I hope we get that evolution from him.
Yeah, and I would be cool with it if he authentically just didn't really care about any of this. Like, I've said this in the past. I believe that Kawhi doesn't care about any of this, and it's just sort of showing up. But I think that there's more investment than Jokic lets on in terms
of... Is he like a Belichick? Is that what you're saying? Where, like, he obviously is obsessed with his sport, but he just doesn't want to communicate it to the public, and so he's like... He's created a shield, basically. Like, do you think he has a second personality in the locker room? Because sometimes they ask his teammates, and they're like, oh, yeah, Joker never talks. He doesn't give speeches. You know, last year during the playoffs, they were like, have you ever given a speech to your teammates? Joker was like, no, never done that. Why would I do that?
No.
Everyone's like, what? It seems unlikely that he's never done that, you know?
No, I don't think that's his style of leadership. But, you know, Peyton Watson has talked about how early in his rookie season, Jokic pulled him aside. And I think that's the sort of thing that Jokic does more than, like, the rah-rah speech in the middle of the locker room. Like, he'll invest in guys who he is intrigued by for one reason or another. And I think even your point on the Wednesday night game is well taken, in as much as, like, if you've played in an NBA Finals, no regular season game is going to matter all that much. But the Nuggets got their ass kicked by the Wolves like 10 days previous, and they showed up and took that game more seriously than the Nuggets have taken other regular season games this season. And Jokic did as well. And you can see that Jokic, he gets more aggressive when the games start to matter, and he'll look for his offense more, particularly if that's what the defense is sort of demanding from him. And particularly the way he approached that Wolves defense, which I thought you articulated well, like he just has so many different ways he can attack. And he was doing a lot of stuff from the free throw line and getting Gobert out in space a little bit.
He's commanding, and bro. He's on really that chess master level with LeBron.
And, you know, as far as the Anthony Edwards side of it, that game was clarifying for me as an Anthony Edwards believer, because I won't lie to you. Before Wednesday, I had been flirting with the idea of mounting a guerrilla MVP campaign for Ant because...
Oh, no.
I just feel like he's been unfairly overlooked in that conversation, where his counting stats are not quite as good as some of his peers. But in terms of night-to-night impact on both ends, the intangible impact he's had on teammates and the overall organization and just the success of the Wolves this season, like, he has had an A-plus season. And particularly if the Wolves had been able to get the one seed while Jokic sort of cruise controlled his way to mid-April, I was ready to make the case that, you know, results should actually matter in these conversations. And then Wednesday happens, and late in the third quarter and into the fourth, just juxtaposing.
Results did matter.
And when you compare where Anthony Edwards is and where Jokic is, it just wasn't even close. And on one hand, obviously, it highlights how great Jokic is. And if you're comparing anyone to Jokic at the end of games, it's sort of an impossible standard. But it also really highlights where Anthony Edwards has to improve, where he's just got to be more deliberate about the way he attacks some of these big possessions. He's got to get himself better shots. And it's the final step for him in terms of becoming like a full-blown superstar. And we've seen steps in other areas. Like, he's a much better passer than he used to be. So I expect that he'll figure it out. But for me, watching the way that game finished was just a really good reminder of the difference between a great player and what an MVP actually looks like. Watching Jokic control things and just get to every spot he wanted to, get Jamal Murray phenomenal shots the entire time. It was a true masterpiece. So I'm now excited for the Nuggets playoff run, but I also have no lingering doubts about Jokic's MVP case after that game.
I think your desire to stand for Ant in this conversation, having it quickly swept out from underneath you, that is why Joker's the MVP, because that applies to basically every single player in the NBA, right? I think the only people who have shown a little bit more backbone than you are the Luka Doncic believers, right? They've really kind of gained momentum here, especially as Dallas kind of climbs and, you know, gets a guaranteed playoff spot and, you know, 50 wins. And like, they're kind of into that conversation. They're much more excited to say, hey, well, Luka's averaging 33-9-9. It's never been done before in NBA history. He's on a winning team. He's, you know, playing the best basketball of his career. He's obviously top three in talent in the league. Like, this guy deserves to be in the conversation. Those are the only people I feel like they've had any staying power. Like, it feels like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's stance have just kind of gone by the wayside a little bit, probably because he's missed some time with that leg injury, kind of minor leg injury. And, you know, Embiid was the one who said this year's conversation's just less toxic.
Yeah.
And that's a credit to Joker, because he's cutting off all of the counter arguments at the pass. You know, it's like anyone who you want to stand for, it's like, well, even Luka, it's like, well, if he was healthier and his team won more, then he'd be as good as Joker. Well, those are two pretty big categories. So I guess we just got to give it to Joker. So when I went through the MVP exercise, it was quick. You know, it was real quick. And it's quicker than it's been in a long time in terms of, you know, selecting him this year. And I do think there's different flavors to each of Joker's MVP seasons. Like, you know, there was one where it was like, oh, he's the hero carrying the team without Murray. There was one where it was like, Joker's the big face, the breakthrough guy. You know, like, he's elevated himself into a status that he wasn't at previously. And this one feels more like the cementer, you know?
Yeah.
It's like he's just clearly the best player in the NBA. You want the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter, no questions asked, against any team, against any matchup. He's going to get you great shots. It almost doesn't matter who his teammates are because he has different ways that he can go if certain guys are out or, you know, if other guys are just cold, not hitting shots or whatever. Like, he's got more counters than anybody, deeper bag than anybody, amazing shot maker. And your favorite point, size. Like, he put Rudy under the rim a lot in that game, you know? And I have Rudy as my defensive player of the year pick this year. You know, the gap between their number one defense and Boston's number two defense is like bigger than the gap between Boston at number two and the number 10 defense. So like, they're out there all by themselves in terms of how great they've been as a defense. And I think that's worth rewarding Rudy for, even though he's got a lot of players around him who are good contributors on that end. But he had no chance against Joker. I mean, no chance. And you don't see that very often. Let me ask you, though, on this Anthony Edwards point, because I would describe his late game approach as just a little erratic. I wouldn't say it's horrible. I wouldn't say it's nearly as good as where I would want it to be. And my concerns are the same concerns you expressed, which is, you know, he's just a little gun happy, trigger happy, right, with some of the shots. And he has almost like 5% too much self-belief, right? So that he's sometimes they're just like low quality shots. And Luka went through a similar thing a couple years ago, and he flirts with it, you know, kind of on and off all the time, right?
Right.
Is he good enough now to win a series as the lead dog? Because what we're going to see when they get to the playoffs, and we don't know their matchups yet, but I suspect it's going to be a lot like Team USA, where when it's really time to win, when it's really winning time, Gobert's touches are going to dry up, right? Rudy, Mike Conley, pick and roll, that sounded great during the regular season. Season on the line, you'd probably rather him take and catch and shoot open threes, Mike Conley, that is, than really being the lead guy, especially as the series wears on. He gets older, he gets worn down, et cetera, right? You look at some of their other options that are out there on the court, unless Cat comes back and, you know, is really looking good from the jump, it feels like a lot's going to fall on Ant's shoulders. I guess 1 to 10 confidence level, can Ant deliver a series victory this year? Or are we going to get some of the frustration we got from that FIBA World Cup run, which it was like, oh, man, like there's a lot of talent on the court. And this is not working out how it's supposed to be. Where's your confidence level?
I would say my confidence level, based on the supporting cast that he's got, my confidence level is at a 6, depending on who is on the other side of the Wolves in the first round. And
I think
you
nailed it. I'm not questioning the premise of that answer. You nailed it. I
think Thank you so much.
Because it's like you expect them to beat the better team, right?
Yeah.
In the first round. But like after that, it's like, like all bets are off, right?
Totally. And one take where I am 100% willing to stand on business and stand behind is that Anthony Edwards should be above Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the MVP rankings. I think people underestimate the difficulty of Ant's situation in Minnesota. And if you switched Anthony Edwards and SGA, the Wolves are worse, whereas Ant is probably going insane with the OKC spacing and all their shooters, and the Thunder are probably winning about the same number of games. Having said that, Shai gets much better shots in the fourth quarter than Anthony Edwards. And Ant, like, he was attacking the rim and getting into the heart of the Denver defense in that Wolves-Nuggets game on Wednesday early in the game. But then late in the game, he settles for these, like, kind of lazy pull-up threes, and the Wolves were on a back-to-back. But he's done that his entire career. So that's what I mean about just learning to be more deliberate, particularly if you're working with a supporting cast like the Wolves when your alternatives are Mike Conley and Kyle Anderson, or who knows what Kat will be bringing to the table when he comes back. But like, if he's the guy, if he's the Luka and everybody else in Minnesota are the Luka-ets or whatever, then he needs to take better shots and be smarter about the way he's approaching late game offense. And that's one thing that Shai does really, really well for OKC. And it's why I feel better about what OKC is going to be bringing to the table in the playoffs. Like, with Shai and Jalen Williams, I know the Thunder are getting good late-game offense. And yeah. with Anthony Edwards,
Minnesota doesn't
it's
have
been
Jalen
a mess.
Williams.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that will wind up reflecting poorly on Anthony Edwards, but it's not his fault he doesn't have a Jalen Williams, right? I think in Shea's defense, I would probably trust him more in a playoff series just overall, and I think he's had a better season overall than Anthony Edwards. I do like that you're sparking the conversation. I do think the right comparison points for Anthony Edwards here, like if we go forward to next year's MVP conversation, the guys who you're going to want to comp him to, Shea, Luka, Tatum. Right. Like that yeah. feels like that's sort of his category. It'll be really interesting to see whether people are willing to give Joker a fourth MVP next year, because he's going to be just as good next year as he is this year. Like there's no reason for him to drop off, but the fatigue factor could come back. You know yeah. what I mean? Especially if Embiid's back in the race and, you know, maybe Giannis has a better, cleaner season than he did this year.
Jokic is also going to be playing at the Olympics all summer, so maybe he shows up and cruise controls. Yeah, I mean, who knows exactly what'll happen, but I could see the Nuggets repeating as champions and then Jokic spending a month in Paris and showing up like fully checked out for the first few months of the season. time will tell on that front. But it's funny because when you were talking about the differences between his MVP seasons, as much as people focus on the stats with Jokic, this season really feels like the eye test season with Jokic, where if you're just watching the MVP candidates, it's really yep. not close in terms of it's the not. Control that he's exerting on a nightly basis and how dominant the Nuggets look when they're locked in with Jokic at the center of everything. Mm. So it's been enjoyable.
You're singing my song.
Yeah.
You're singing my song, Andrew. This is the exact same energy I was bringing on that, like, let's hype up Jokic podcast, because I think you're 100% right. And the funny thing about the eye test versus the stats is he ranks first in every advanced a stat, like win shares, wins above replacement, player, like whatever stat you want to use, Joker's one. So yeah. it's just like, it's one of those things where like everybody can actually like get into a circle and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And like, we know who the MVP is. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Can I actually say something nice about the NBA, like unqualified praise for the NBA briefly?
Go for it.
On this topic of awards, which we're kind of dabbling with right now, the NBA 65 games played threshold caught them a lot of grief, especially from players. And then I think from some media members who were taking their cues from the players and getting so caught up in like, oh, this is going to like negatively impact Tyrese Halliburton's Supermax eligibility. Mm. Like what a dumb rule. Like they were all like going that direction. Right. And when we take a step back, if you want to be cynical, they have the 65 games played threshold. You know, basically, if you want to win an end of season NBA award, you have to play at least 65 games. They put that in this year to protect their television partners, right? That's the cynical viewpoint.
Yeah.
If you're slightly less cynical, you say, well, they're trying to protect their television partners so that the television partners will have viewers, right? And viewers are fans. So this is, in my opinion, a rule, even though it's kind of going through this like sausage making process of TV ratings, that is designed to be fan friendly. Stars are going to be on the court more often. They're expected to be on the court. If you're going to buy a ticket, you're more likely to see a star. That's the idea of the rule. And they caught a lot of crap, especially from players. We don't want to have to be held to this standard, blah, blah, blah. This was a great rule and it worked.
All right, and that is the end of the free preview. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get two episodes every week from me, Andrew Sharp, and Ben Golliver, you can go to greatestofalltalk.com and subscribe to the show.